You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Six months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. Eight teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, we left our homes up in Bristol Bay for the waters of Miami shore. With a hippo at the helm and our severance pay, we fly the pirate flag once more. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Well, the ship is a wreck, shit stains the deck as Michael Hollow's fellas make more. And Billy is a worry that he's got the scurvy, cause Chris ate all the limes in store. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Now Roy is a chum when he's on the rum, he's the glue when we spring a leak. And Stu is a mess, he does less and less, and Greg's sounding worse each week. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Someone yelled ahoy, who the hell's cabin boy? Somebody named Tony, who knows? Once we got the skip, well, a mean jump ship, cause he knew we would sail to gold. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. For the pirate radio.
Roy?
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 Do it.
Get the table!
Yeah.
We're killing it.
Your own table, I mean... Yeah, man, computers in there. I mean, we got Whitten Ham behind you. I mean, you can. Panthers are in first place, man.
Woo! All right! Ah, hot damn! We got a good team! Drieger? Drieger, that's the answer, right? Drieger's the answer, not Bob. Drieger.
Bob is getting paid $10 million per year, and he's living up to that contract. But yeah, they have like a rotation going with the goaltenders right now, and Drieger seems to be playing better.
Who starts game one, Roy? Game one is tomorrow night. Are you starting the guy you're paying, or are you starting the guy that has just looked better, eye test style?
Game one playoffs, you're saying, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, you got to go with Drieger, because he's the one that's playing better.
I trust him.
Driggs.
I trust Driggs. So in a matter of a week, they've beaten both Stanley Cup final representatives.
That's right.
What?
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, representatives. They've beaten the Lightning. They've beaten the Stars. They're in first place in the Central Division presented by Discover. Is this fool's gold?
Well, you know the movies, the Shawshank Redemption, the plot of the movie is basically about hope. And there was two sides to that. There was Red's side, which is hope is a dangerous thing. And there was Andy's side, which is hope is the greatest of things. Right now, I'm on Red's side. I'm on, like, this might be, like, fool's going right now, but we'll see towards the end of the season if the Panthers are still up there. But right now, I'm nervous. I'm really nervous right now.
I could have just said Stanley Cup finalist. Anywho, the defense was a problem last year. We all knew that. However, they didn't really address the defense with big names in the offseason. They really helped the defense by bringing in certain forwards that have that aspect to their game. Am I supposed to continue to expect that front line of the Florida Panthers to continue playing this well defensively? And is Jonathan Huberdeau what he's shown us so far this season, which is an absolute superstar and someone that could be in MVP contention?
Well, Jonathan Huberdeau, well, he's, I don't know about MVP, but he's definitely definitely one of the superstars in this league. And he, I think he's going to show that the entirety of this season. He's him and Patrick Hornquist on the second line has been phenomenal. So look forward to that being even better down the line. Yes, Chris.
Roy, Huberdeau, his skill set, like, am I crazy to compare? I'm going to say the name LeBron. Like, I'm not saying he's the most dominant player, best player in the league, but just in terms of he's like a creator. He gets into the lane. His passing is just insane. Like, I see him as like a five-tool guy. He can do literally everything on the ice as opposed to just being like a scorer.
But he's not.
He's
like
a playmaker.
LeBron. Yeah, he's not LeBron.
He's not LeBron, but he's certainly a playmaker out there.
The passes, man. Like, he's so good at hockey. I'm like new to this hockey thing. Really
well said.
He's a professional hockey player, Chris. I mean, man,
impressive with the stick. What he can do, man. Whew.
Chris,
you went to passing last night, Chris?
I was there last night. Very socially distant. Very impressed by the whole process the Panthers have. Like, taped out, like seats you can't even like sit on because they're taped off. I felt very safe and I enjoyed it.
How did LeBron do?
He did well, man. I'm telling you, he was in, cutting to the middle of the lane, dishing it out, behind the back passes.
You know, I had a moment like that with another player who this might not surprise you, but it's like one of those things where you go to a game, someone has like a great game, and you're like, oh my God, this player is like really good. And then you realize like, well, maybe it was just a good game.
Wait,
it
Billy,
was
you
Deion
left?
Waiters when okay. he was on the Cavs.
Okay, got it, good.
Against the Heat, and I was like, wow, this Deion Waiters, he's good. This guy's good. And then he was on the Heat years later. I'm like, perfect.
There's so many different things that I like observed last night just watching that you don't normally pay attention to. I love watching the officials on a hockey rink, like during the game. Yeah. They're almost dying every possession. They're almost getting slammed into the boards. Also, the camera guys. These guys are impressive. Those pucks move around quick. I saw this camera guy right in front of me. The way he's whipping that thing around, I was like, he's not getting any good shots. But his red light kept going on, man. They kept going to him.
Anthony Duclair actually skated into a linesman last night and kind of broke up the play. So sometimes that sort of thing happens.
Roy, real fast, another observation that I had last night. So our goalie is on like my side where I was sitting in the first period. Obviously, the second period, he switches sides and goes to the other end. But when the second period was about to start and they came back out onto the ice, Driedger, before going over to his new side, skated back over to the crease where he was for the first period and like took his skates and like as if he was like, this goalie's about to be here. I'm like messing up his turf and I'm going to skate. But then the goalie came out and saw him doing it and wasn't offended by it. Like it was almost like a respectful thing to do. What was he doing there?
Well, normally when you slush up the ice in the crease like that, that's supposed to slow down the puck. And that's not really something that Driedger should have been doing on the other
crease. Why is he doing that?
He got confused. So he went to the wrong net. That's it. He was going to do it at his own net, and he did it. He did it at the wrong net. He went to the wrong cage.
Mike, why are you laughing? You're laughing at Stugatz now. You were laughing at Chris Cody before. What are the two things you were laughing at?
Hockey experts here.
Yeah,
it's just the way they talk about. You should have heard. You just walked in. You should have heard Chris Cody describe Jonathan Huberdeau. If you could indulge. Dan, once more, what is Jonathan Huberdeau so good at, Chris?
He's just an overall five-tool player. Like he's not just an offensive player. He gets in the lane. He's behind the back passes. He'll skate through 17 defensemen and still emerge with the puck. He's very impressive. He's good at hockey.
I think the answer Mike was looking for was hockey. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yes. You said he's like good
he's
at hockey.
LeBron.
Yeah, he's
good
LeBron.
At it. Like not just like. You know, scoring, like good at it.
Roy, I'm a hockey novice. What are the tools of hockey? Are there five tools?
I don't think one of them is spinning around behind your back, which is one of, I don't think those are one
the
of
old
the tools.
The old spinaroo, Dan.
So what are the tools? Aren't the tools, is the hockey player also a five-tool player? Is it speed? Is it strength? Is it vision? Is it hand-eye coordination?
I'm guessing it's skating, passing, shooting.
I'm saying, are the five tools different? When you think of athletes and you call an athlete a five-tool player, are they indeed five-tool players in hockey? Or are there more tools? Because I know plenty of five-tool players in baseball who can't skate. So I'm guessing that skating, is skating one of the one of the tools. It has to be, correct?
I mean, if you didn't know how to skate, you wouldn't be able to play, now would you?
Seems but, like a requirement.
But what, Cody, Greg, do you know what the five tools are? First of all, do you know if such a thing as a five-tool hockey player exists? Is that a phrase that's used in hockey? And if so, what are the five tools?
The five tools begin with skating, which is an absolutely rudimentary skill. If you can't skate, you can't even pick up a stick. The other thing is, number two is holding a stick properly, which allows you that beautiful sweeping motion on the shot. The third thing is you have to be able to enter into a fight without embarrassing yourself.
Oh, Jesus.
Although that's not quite the skill that it was 10 years ago, because they've emasculated the sport. And Roy, what would the other two skills be? Because I'm out of skills.
The skating, passing, shooting, puck handling.
Yeah, passing, defense. I forgot.
Defense, physicality.
Tenacity.
Those are eight tools. That's a lot of tools.
Well, it's harder than baseball, Dan. I found on Reddit from 5 years ago, someone whose username is crazy_knucklehead has the five tools in baseball.
I know what the five tools are in baseball.
I believe hockey.
Give you the equivalence.
Yeah, I would like to hear that. I believe hockey has six tools, Billy. That's what I believe.
And goaltending, by the way.
Okay, well. Yeah.
No, wait a minute. Well, goaltending can't be one of the tools. Goaltending's not one of the tools. It's one of the tools for a goaltender. It's not one of the tools for any of the other hockey players.
Tell that to Driggs.
The coach in D3 that replaced Gordon Bombay, he always told Charlie Conway he's got to play two-way hockey. So maybe there's only two ways.
Yeah. Barkey plays two ways.
Offense, defense.
That offense, defense. That's what you meant by that.
He also said, be prepared to make the first move, Conway, when playing defense.
I have a question about goaltending. And Roy, you're the hockey expert, so you can answer.
Thank you for playing off your son in a way that didn't make him feel totally alone there, in a way that fell completely out of the Zoom because he said something that nobody was listening to. Please continue, right. Greg.
Roy, why can't, and you're going to think I'm kidding with this comment, but I'm really half serious. Why can't an NHL team find like an 800-pound man
in the goal. Here we
to
go.
Literally
fill again with the fat the guy in the goal?
He's so big.
Right.
Like picture a Jabba the
right.
Hutt.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Should hockey be looking for goaltenders on my 600-pound life?
You would agree that Jabba the Hutt, it'd be like a wall. I mean, he'd be the best goalie in the history of hockey, would he not?
You'd agree with that.
You have to stay on your skates. You have to be able to squat and be physical and in shape enough to not just sit there and lay there in front of the goal like a blob.
There's no rule.
There is a rule. There is a rule.
You have to be on your skates.
You can't,
because I've asked this. I asked this question 20 years ago when I didn't know anything about hockey, and hockey came into town. I'm like, why can't we just put a sumo wrestler in the goal?
Oh yeah,
and it was explained to me 20 years ago.
I forgot.
And what'd they say?
And the Panthers. I just told you, and the Panthers haven't been any good since then. And so the way that Greg Cody, career columnist at the Miami Herald, begins his hockey coverage after asking if goaltending was one of the tools of the five-tool hockey player, Greg Cody limps in with put a sumo wrestler in goal.
Hey, no, I didn't say a sumo wrestler, but your point's well taken.
It's 2021. Boy. I'm not here for the body shaming of sumo wrestlers as though they're not professional athletes. A sumo wrestler can squat. Sumo wrestlers are probably more athletic than I am and than any of us are. Sumo wrestlers got to go down, and then they go up, and they punch. They go, and they do the pushing thing. You know what I'm talking about? You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Sumo wrestlers could definitely squat, and they're more agile than we think. They can. Sumo wrestlers could be quick as cats.
It's
not those five tools.
It's not just squatting. It's squatting on skates. Like there's okay.
But you squat on land. You squat on skates.
Exactly. But to Greg's point, why not just put a larger, like a Magnus Van Magnussen? Why not put him in the goal? It'd be impossible to score on that guy, would it not?
Yes. Yes.
It would absolutely be possible to score on that guy, to guys.
It would be.
Yes, it would. First of all, shooters are pretty accurate, so they can find the corners and just snipe it past them easily. Plus, there's passing. So now you're getting these goaltenders, these oversized goaltenders out of position.
Just don't move.
Don't move.
I think the better question would be, if you insist on entertaining this, is there a human being large enough that if you change the rules and didn't force a hockey player to remain on his or her skates, that person can be in front of the entirety of the goal in a way that would not allow a single puck to go into the net if that person just sits there like a blob.
I trust Ndamukong Suh with this task.
The other thing about this is there are maximum requirements to these goaltender, to the goaltending equipment, so it would probably want to fit these oversized people.
No, you get custom equipment. And this whole staying on the skate thing.
I just said those.
I'm not a hockey expert. I'm not a hockey expert. I'll start with that.
Expert.
I see plenty of hockey goalies on the ice, kicking their legs in the air, trying to make these dramatic saves with their gloves. They're not on their skates the whole time. It's not like if they're down, it's like, all right, you're down. We got to reset. They're on the ice all the time. They just have to be on the ice, on their skates for a second, and then they just fall down. Whoopsie daisy. And then they just start going and doing their blocking thing.
Those are desperation plays, Billy.
I nominate Whitlock.
Chris, how do you feel about what it is that's happening with Tua and the Miami Dolphins, where you have a couple of things happening? One, you have ESPN Upstate reporting that Deshaun Watson is available to only the Jets, the Dolphins, and Carolina. And then, on top of that, you have a situation that you don't see all the time in these scouting interviews and the lead up to the draft, where Devontae Smith is being asked who he prefers, Tua or Mac Jones, and he immediately answers Mac Jones. Now, Mac Jones Mac Jones made Devontae Smith into what it is. Like, it makes sense that he would pick the guy that made him the Heisman candidate.
Yeah, I guess. Mac Jones was really, really good. He was for two seasons for Alabama. It was very good, so I'm just surprised to hear him pick one. That's all.
I'm wondering, though, how and where we are with Chris Cody and his wavering as it regards Tua, because he has been a bit of a ship in the sea in a storm.
Tua, listen, I am going all over the place with this. Yesterday, I saw those pictures where he was running. He had a Billy Gill thing going on. As I've dissected these pictures even further, I'm not as impressed with these pictures. The only one that was impressive of him looking jacked was the one where he looked like Billy Gill. I'd rather have, if you're asking me, Dan, I want Deshaun Watson. That's the question. That's where I'm at right now in the wavering.
Today.
Here's what you need to be worried about in those pictures, Chris, is the picture that we saw was a very jacked right arm, but he's left-handed. So we need to see what the left arm's looking like, and then we can fully determine how this offseason season is going for him. You'd assume that his right arm and his left arm are growing at the same rate, right? Who knows, though? You've seen some tennis players' forearms. They grow at different rates. Yeah. So actually, Chris, this could be a source of optimism. If his right arm is looking that good, imagine what his left arm is looking like.
Has there ever been a player who's more needed like a marketing campaign during the offseason? I feel like everyone is trying to convince me that Tua Tagovailoa is good when my eyes told me very much that he wasn't. Like, I saw there was a story that Mike Gesicki at some Penn State football dinner was talking about how, I'm a huge believer in Tua. Like, there's all these stories. There's like a huge campaign around trying to convince me that Tua is good. Like, I saw that he wasn't. And, you know, I'm not saying that he won't be, but it's bizarre the length that everyone in the Dolphins organization is going to try and tell me that Tua was actually good.
I understand what Smith is doing and backing up his quarterback, even though both are his quarterback, but be wary of this Mac Jones stuff. The analytics, not too kind to Mac Jones. Pro Football Focus has a metric that grades quarterbacks beyond their first read, and he's not good. He's not good beyond his first read. He's kind of the guy that if he holds the ball longer than 2.5 seconds, you
Devontae
want to throw away.
Devontae was always the first read, though.
But this is why fans don't like this, Mike, because the analytics said Sam Darnold was going to be great, and he's been anything but great. I mean, no one knows.
I think you're doing something with the analytics. Because
I don't think I am.
No, Sam Darnold was always
Romo
a high ceiling.
He wasn't accurate. He wasn't the kind of accurate that people associated. Romo said that, but it wasn't because Romo was using advanced metrics.
Yeah, forget analytics.
I'm getting the information from Mina. Mina told me the analytics said that Sam Darnold was great.
She liked Sam Darnold as a prospect, but beyond analytics, just look at the simple counting stats. He was very reckless with the ball in college. That was always the book on him. The scouting report was, if he could figure that part of the game out, he has a high ceiling. Well, like, that's a pretty big if. If someone can stop turning the ball over, is massive. Not a lot of players figure that out. They can't all be Baker Mayfield.
But this Mac Jones, like, I like that. Like, he sees what he wants and he throws the ball to that person. That's a good thing. Analytics,
what he wants is the Heisman Trophy winner wide open.
Who wouldn't want that?
With Tua, what am I doing here? Could it be that he's like too kind He looks just too nice. I need my quarterback to have some Baker Mayfield in him. Like, you know, like he'll stick it to the media.
Two Baker Mayfield references.
I don't know, man. There's just something about Tua. I feel like that's what Dolphin fans are doing. They're overcompensating, saying how good he is at these little things that we don't really see just because he's so, like, passive and the Dolphin fans are so invested in him that it's like.
Disgusting. Disgusting. What? Classic nice guys finish last situation here where you just want a bad boy that treats you poorly because Tua's too nice and he brings you flowers on the first date and you're like,
He loves his parents like a lot.
What?
Like, I want a bad boy a little bit.
Too much.
He's just too perfect.
Wow, Mike said it. Mike said it. I can't believe he went out there and said it. That is a shocking thing to say. The take was not strong enough. Mike strengthened it up a little bit.
Look, he loves his parents too much. Everyone here, whether it's their Cuban background or whether it's a situation like Dan where you invite him to dinner and his parents come, it's not the greatest situation to be attached at the hip to your parents at such an age. And I think Tua really has to break off from his parents at this point. It's a take you're not hearing
anyone
else.
So we want a Chris Cody that's crapping on his dad every week nationally?
Yes.
No, but that's he's too focused on his family. Focus on football.
Use your dad to climb in your life and then cut him at every turn. That's the way to do it.
You know, all of a sudden we've gotten to the point where we're criticizing the Samoan culture. Can't we... This guy, Tua, is being criticized and doubted all over the map now that we're questioning his heritage because that's part of the Samoan culture is to cherish past generations. Tua did nothing as a rookie to engender this doubt.
Exactly.
He did fine as a rookie. Around him. I'm not saying I wouldn't rather have Deshaun Watson. I would in a heartbeat. But Tua moving forward with tools around him, including a premier receiver, and an extra alignment and a good running game, he's got a chance to be a great quarterback. And to doubt him based on what you saw of him as a rookie is really over the top. It's uncalled for. And that's why the Dolphins have come out at every opportunity to say, Tua's our guy, Tua's our guy, because they hear all this static in the background doubting this kid.
There's the homer, as ever. He is there for you. He is indignant. He is saying that people are out of line. But I think I'm with Whittingham on the idea of I do feel like a whole lot of people who are biased in him working out are trying to convince me that he's better than what I saw last year. I feel like Whittingham's general overarching theory is a correct one, that there are a whole lot of people who are tied up in the investment who are trying to convince us that our eyes are lying to us on what we've seen so far. And his point is well taken on. It doesn't mean that he can't be good. It just means that what you saw last year didn't look a lot of times like it was franchise quarterback great. It just didn't look that way.
But that's virtually every quarterback on every team in the offseason when they didn't have a great year. Like T.O. was crying over Tony Romo saying that's my quarterback when people would criticize Tony Romo. That's what football does. That's football, guys. I hope the Dolphins are taking notes of all you naysayers here and they're keeping track that Greg Cody is the only one that's keeping the right path, saying, you know what, let's give this Tua a chance. And then when Tua becomes a megastar, they remember all the naysayers in this room and everyone that doubted Tua. Because guess what? Greg Cody never wavered once.
He said at the end of his statement he'd rather have Deshaun Watson. I mean,
well, all things equal, but well, that doesn't – see, it's not an either-or thing. You can believe in both things. Yes, Deshaun Watson is a proven elite quarterback. Of course, I'd rather have him instead of Tua, but it doesn't mean that I doubt Tua's ability to become a really good quarterback. And I don't know what you all saw last year. What I saw was a rookie who went 7-3, who led a couple of fourth quarter drives, and who did a lot with very little around him. Because when oft-injured Devontae Parker is your elite receiver, you need help in the receiver room.
But, Greg, when they're on the road in Las Vegas and Tua's having a nightmare and they bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick, did you think that Ryan Fitzpatrick was better in that situation than Tua? And in Week 17, when you have to go on the road and win in Buffalo and you get tonked, would you have thought that Ryan Fitzpatrick would have been better in that scenario? And if Ryan Fitzpatrick is the preferable quarterback in this spot, then you have to at least have a shred of doubt.
No, I don't have doubt.
You don't know who you're talking to, Whittingham, if you think there's a shred of doubt that
you add, he changed his mind.
You add everything you're saying and then combine it with he's being compared to the two draft picks who showed you more flashes. There's no dispute of that. that Burrow and Herbert showed you more in the way of flashes, maybe because they have more help. I don't know.
Right.
Cincinnati's maybe. Help really? Doesn't. No,
Burrow had no help.
Cincinnati's help stay doesn't strong, impress Greg. Me a whole lot.
Burrow had some good receivers. No. Just because they're not household names doesn't mean they're not great and well. Burrow has, but he had a terrible offensive line. I think that's it. We keep hearing about how he doesn't have help, and then Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in as a relief pitcher, and all of a sudden the weapons actually look like they're threatening weapons. Tua could be good, but what's happening here with Tua isn't that hard to figure out. He just didn't look that great his rookie season. That doesn't mean he can't be great, but you're absolutely right to have your doubts when he hasn't been as good comparative to some of the other quarterbacks even in his own class.
How could you not have your doubts? First off, Deshaun Watson on a bad team, and no one had it worse than Deshaun last year, had 36 total touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 5,000 yards passing, on the worst team in the league. I mean, that's the guy you want. The Dolphins should give everything they have to two first-round picks to go get that quarterback.
The Texans' skill guys were better than the Dolphins' skill guys.
I mean,
really? What the hell's going on here? 2 weeks ago, you guys were buying Nokia and GameStop and all these companies that had failed for years. Believed in them, and you won't give a shot to this rookie quarterback who only played a handful of games. And you know what? Showed me something. I saw something in his eyes. I saw something in his gut. I saw the fire there. Translate onto the field and play? No, but it was in his eyes and his heart. And you know what, guys? You're playing the games wrong, babies. You got to sell this guy, because even if he's bad, you got to have other people think that he's good, and they're listening and they're watching. Say you could trade Tua for Deshaun. Now's when you sell Tua. You say, oh my God, he's great. There's something big inside of him. There's a monster that's going to come out of there. This is what you need to say, because the Texans are listening to this show right now. So you need to convince them that Tua can be good so that you can dump Tua, because he's probably.
Where else do you see things? You see things in the eyes, the heart, the gut. Where else do you see
the soul, Dan?
The soul
as
well. His essence as well.
Yep.
An essence that is too nice to his parents.
Definitely. Way too nice.
No
way
such thing.
Nice. Consume with them.
Yeah. Doesn't he look sad when he like throws an incompletion? Like he looks up at the Jumbotron, like, where did that go wrong? And he has like this very sad disposition.
I think he's looking at Dad. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. Oh, keep in mind some of those quotes from Dad last year. He's just, yeah. I'm just saying, there's a fear factor there that shouldn't be ignored.
On this marketing campaign, the other one that I noticed too, so Patrick Mahomes, when they played the Chiefs, goes out of his way to go super complimentary about Tua. Oh, I think he's great. He's got all these traits. And then, of course, I looked it up, and they have the same agent. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a whole campaign going on here. Try and tell me that Tua is good.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one I'm not convinced about, with campaigns telling me how great he is Mahomes.
Oh, for the love of God. I mean,
took a step back.
Your quarterback analysis wasn't bad enough. You're going to double down on something worse now? You're going to say it's not? All right, what does Mahomes have inside him?
I mean, if you guys are into celebrating incompletions, then you guys should love Tua. What's the deal? Why aren't you guys happy with Tua?
All right, let's.
Because the last game they got hammered.
No, let's hear the analysis.
Well, what was what Patrick Mahomes' last game look like, friend?
Very true,
friend.
Friend and babies. He's hit us with a friend and babies.
I love it.
I had coffee this morning, guys.
Greg, you trade everything you can for Deshaun Watson. Everything you possibly can. I don't know if you saw that video of J.J. Watt putting his arm around Deshaun Watson at the end of last season saying, we wasted such a great year. Dan flippantly said the Texans had better weapons, and I think you could probably certainly make that argument. But Will Fuller, Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, not at the peak of their powers. Will Fuller had an actually pretty good year, to the point on Thanksgiving, I'm like, what is this guy on? Steroids? Turned out he was.
Yes, he missed like 6 weeks. Exactly.
David Johnson, like those weapons were in and out. Deshaun Watson's a special, special quarterback when healthy. If he wants to come to your team, you do whatever you can to make it happen and you figure the rest out.
We talk about this position all the time, the most important position in sports. The Dolphins are positioned to go get one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Whether it's the black head coach, the black GM, the young quarterback, all the draft picks, they are in a position to go get what could be a missing piece.
Tepper's
go get
them. Tepper's getting them. Tepper wants Deshaun Watson.
Why would he want to play there, Deshaun Watson?
He went to Clemson. They're the Carolina Panthers.
I know, but he wants to win, Mike.
They're pretty well positioned. They're not as well positioned as the Miami Dolphins, really.
Not if you give up McCaffrey and 3 first-round picks.
Well, we'll see exactly what the deal is.
Greg Cody, Russell Wilson, it's being said, is costing you 3 first-round picks. This is what is being reported. Greg, you have seen the media change a great deal in our lifetimes. And this is something that I don't know how to measure the accuracy on. ESPN Upstate, which is a radio affiliate that covers the Carolinas, is reporting that he has approved trades, Deshaun Watson has, to the Jets, Dolphins, and Panthers. I'm not interested in the minutiae of this. I'm interested in whether the reporting is credible or not. Is ESPN Upstate, by virtue of having the ESPN letters, is that something that makes it true for you? Yes or no, that Deshaun Watson has approved trades to Carolina, the Jets, and the Dolphins? And if not, where do you put the bar on what's true when it comes to the reporting around Deshaun Watson?
I tend to believe it because all of the speculation has centered on those teams and maybe Denver. I wouldn't totally rule out John Elway's ardor for Deshaun Watson. I mean, it's that, you know, Deshaun Watson is strong-arming this whole thing, using his leverage beautifully. And if he has a chance, he has a chance to determine exactly where he goes. And I think he has narrowed it down to those teams, and it makes a lot of sense. We saw, you know, where everybody's reading tea leaves, and Deshaun Watson was down here partying with a few of the Dolphin players just a week or two ago. And I don't doubt that that those are the teams, maybe along with Denver, that he's narrowed it down to. And I think all of them are going to throw mega deals at this guy. The question is, unlike what Mike said, you have to draw a line somewhere. You know, you can't give up two first-round draft picks this year and next year and, you know, four players. And you have to leave yourself something to build around because, you know, as great as Deshaun Watson's individual stats were last year, the team was horrific. They were awful because he didn't have help. And if he walks into that same situation in Miami, I don't know that the bottom line is going to be much better in terms of wins and losses.
I wouldn't judge whether or not he has help down here based on what Tua can do, because when Ryan Fitzpatrick's out there, it looks like Ryan Fitzpatrick has plenty of help to the point that he's throwing the ball all over the field. It's not that Tua doesn't have the weapons on the outside to not throw the ball downfield. He throws one of the nicest sideline patterns in the NFL. He just doesn't do it enough. He doesn't do it. He doesn't let the weapons be special that he has on the outside, so you don't even have a representative sample to know if those weapons are good or not.
I always worry about the quarterbacks that need help. If you're a great quarterback, the players you have are good enough. You'll make them better. You'll make good players great. That's what you'll do if you're a really, truly great quarterback.
Whatever the asking
right.
price.
But didn't you just say, there's a reason that Deshaun Watson had terrific individual stats last year, but the team didn't win.
I thought you just got done saying, Stugatz, that Deshaun Watson's skill players were the worst in the league, so he didn't make anybody better according to the way that you're doing the analysis.
No, but he had a great season with, you know, Cutie as his number two wide receiver. I'm not even certain I'm saying that name right.
But Stugatz, you're the ultimate WL guy. They didn't win.
Yeah. Okay, but what did he do the last season?
Was it because of him? He was up 24 points against Patrick Mahomes.
He played every game and they didn't win.
I know, but he was up 24 against Mahomes the year before that.
To Chris's point, though, it is shocking that Deshaun Watson was healthy an entire season and the Texans were that bad. That can't be dismissed.
I dismissed
it. His team had 10 wins. Two was.
Fitzpatrick had seven of them.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
Okay, there it is. There it is. He just threw a number out there. There's no fact to it. And he just, hey, look it up. Yes, he did. And when you said, no, he didn't, his response is, yes, he did. And there we go.
Sports radio.
And the segment. Yeah, sports radio done poorly, not on the radio.
6 months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA play-in tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. 8 teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA play-in tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Roy, while everyone was doing Dolphin talk, I was Googling what the difference could possibly be between Bobrovsky and Driedger outside of Bobrovsky's immense salary and the fact that Driedger we all think is better. They're different types of goalies. Bobrovsky's more of your butterfly, standard butterfly goalie, and Driedger, who's turned to yoga, which is a skill set I want all my goalies going to, by the way, is this reverse vertical horizontal goalie. goalie. Have you heard about this? It's basically like a hybrid butterfly. Like half their body is butterfly and the other half just hugs the post. I feel a lot safer in terms of the angles that you're giving the shooter. There's Drieger, man. I'm telling you, he should be our number one.
Yeah, hybrid. Yeah, that's the new type of goalie, like the combination of stand-up and the combination of butterflies. So yeah, that's hybrid of goaltender. Yeah, that seems to be the new thing going around with goaltenders.
Well, then why would Bobrovsky still be a butterfly? Because then he just leaves a top shelf where Mrs. Mueller keeps a peanut butter exposed the entire time.
Well, now you're just changing the game of how a goaltender has been brought up to play. That's kind of hard to do.
Is this an analytics thing where we're moving away from butterfly goalies because the shooters have figured this out?
I don't think it's an analytics thing. I just think it's just a style of play that goaltenders are being brought up now. I don't think it's an analytics thing.
How good is that Stars goalie, by the way? My God.
Yeah, I was worried after that first period because it looks like he was in playoff mode for a little bit. But then the Panthers just started throwing shots at the net.
Yeah, well, that's how you win. You throw shots. Just throw the biscuit in front of the net, see what happens. Remember, the puck, it's oddly shaped. It can take a couple of weird bounces for you. But the Panthers, I was a little worried last night because they were doing that thing that we warned against all of last year, Roy. They were pissing the Dallas Stars off. You do not want to do that. The chip on their shoulder is immense.
Well, now if you piss the Panthers off, it's going to be a problem because they have shown a lot of resilience this year.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. If you piss the Panthers off, do you have some problems? And also, is indeed the hockey puck oddly shaped? Because the football is oddly shaped, but the hockey puck is just circularly shaped. I don't feel like it is all that oddly shaped.
And you've never heard the term tricky biscuit?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about whether it's a tricky biscuit or not. I don't think of it as oddly shaped.
No, it's that vulcanized rubber on mm-hmm. the ice. I mean, it just takes crazy bounces all over the place.
But that's not a
it's like a frog.
That's not an oddly shaped. You think it's a frog?
It's haphazard. I mean, everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Looks like a frog.
Vulcanized, haphazard frog.
Right. Real pissing match last night then, huh?
Yeah, it was definitely a pissing match last night.
Cody, do you have any contributions on the Panthers other than wanting to put a sumo wrestler in goal? Do you have anything here that you can bring us in the way of columnist expertise as a reporter in this market since the franchise? Please rub all the sleep out of your eyes before it is you get to whatever it is the plenty is in your analysis.
Well, first of all, not many of us have actually held a hockey puck. I have, and I'm here to tell you it's surprisingly heavy. It has the heft of a highlight pelota. It's a heavy piece of equipment. And the other thing I have to observe is that the Cats. I always refer to the Panthers as the Cats because I feel like they're my team, even though I never go to a game.
Many people do.
Has Huberto taken over this team? Because Roy, for 5 years, it was Barkov's team, right? Sasha Barkov, the budding superstar, and now it seems like it's Huberto's team. Who's the face, the rightful face of the Panthers right now?
Oh, it's still Sasha Barkov's team. I mean, he's the captain.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean that's an honorarium, right? I mean, come on.
All right,
isn't Huberto a better player right now?
Greg, this is not good enough for me to ask you for your expertise and you to ask Roy, who's the face of the team, is not showing off your expertise. Let's get you off of the computer and off of the microphone and get you back on a landline. I feel like
you haven't
been your best self here in the first hour here, and okay. I feel like we found a secret formula here. So if you could please just call into the show and pace around the room, maybe we can get better hockey analysis out of you than asking Roy who's the face of the team.
By
asking that question, I'm implying that Huberto is now the face of the team. I was just hoping I'd have the heft of Roy's expertise to back me up on that.
I appreciate Greg as an influencer in this market for actually having the discussion too many media types are afraid to actually have, Dan, because you didn't want to answer the question, whose team is this, Huberto's or Barkov's?
I don't want to answer the question.
Why
because
not? What are you hiding, Dan?
I
think it's a terrible, terrible sports radio podcast question for our audience specifically.
Okay, who takes a final shot then?
Right.
Who takes a final shot?
Wait, no, we go to penalty shots, and you have to have one guy to take your final penalty shot. Who is Dan Le Batard choosing? Huh? Huberto?
I'm choosing a different profession if that's the route I choose to make content out of.
It's kind of like the Anthony Davis LeBron debate.
Really,
whose team is it, Huberto or Barkov?
Did you guys see how lazy LeBron? That's too many regular season games played right there. Losing to the Wizards. I don't want to do this anymore. That was the laziest, most bored game tying shot I've ever seen taken by a player like that. It was absolutely him just coming up against the Wizards. I'm down three. All right, this'll do. I'll do it from over here. Nowhere near the rims. Kind of sideways.
I love.
And it made a sound. It sounded like a washing machine was hitting the backboard.
I love bored LeBron going for 31, 13, and 9.
But the end of the game, you know what I'm talking about. At Lebatard Show, Gamma, put it on the poll. Was that the most bored game tying shot you have ever seen someone take from LeBron last night?
Someone took the sound of the shot and remixed it against Gnarls Barkley's Crazy, you know, like the beginning drum beat, because it made such a bizarre sound off glass.
Can you do that, Mike? Can you get
can
us
pay
just
Gnarls Barkley for you their get music us
the sound? Can you get us the sound of the shot so that we could just play for the audience that it sounded like a washing machine, the top of a washing machine hitting, just taking off? What is that, the top of a washing machine, when you take it off and you unhinge it, what is that called? Do you have any idea what the top of that is?
A cover?
A lid?
A lid, yes.
Like if you can understand Dan asking that question.
When do you think is the last time I used a washing machine?
There are front loaders now, you know.
The lid, yes. Yeah. I actually have front loaders. Thank you,
Roy. Yeah, you do.
Roy.
I see it. Baby. Massive.
So you think LeBron just wanted to go home last night? Like that?
Did
you
see
it? The way it came up? No, I'm trying to find it right now. Did I see it? I wasn't watching Lakers Wizards at 1 a.m. Were you?
Yeah, you had action.
It doesn't have to be at 1 a.m. You could just come in and watch some highlights before you come in and do the show. It's not like there's an
TVs
absence.
Don't work.
I not mean, an absence of LeBron in the world. The TVs in the world don't work. No.
I don't have one in my car.
I thought you listened to sports radio 90 minutes coming in.
I did. No one painted a picture of LeBron's final shot last night.
I thought whenever LeBron takes a final shot, we're obligated as a country to talk about
it. He kept winning. He kept winning, so we just moved on.
Yeah.
Now it's just Jordan versus
But now
LeBron.
He's losing. They're playing him a ton of minutes. He doesn't have Anthony Davis out there, and we've all got perspective now. We've got perspective about the regular season. If he's that bored about it, then we'll be bored about it too.
I don't think it's perspective. I think it's fatigue.
Well, he said he never gets tired.
No, we have fatigue talking about him.
I didn't feel like you got tired of talking about it when they beat the Lakers and Caruso was taking the last shot a couple of games ago when the Heat beat the Lakers.
I mean, I did. I only talked about it during the local hour. And once again, I see the headlines from this game. Wizards beat shorthanded Lakers. The shorthanded Lakers should beat the shorthanded Wizards because that's not a good team. They get a lot of credit for when Anthony Davis is out, but they're champions. They've earned that. I just wish the same credit was extended to the Eastern Conference champions.
I just figured the game would get you more excited about Bradley Beal. I mean, he beat LeBron on the road. He played
Bradley
great. Yeah.
I love Bradley Beal, and I wouldn't give up Tyler Hero for James Harden, I would give up Tyler Hero for Bradley Beal. And I like Tyler Hero. I think he has an immensely high ceiling. I'm just a big fan of Bradley Beal.
Wow, two shocking comments from Mike Ryan here early in the show. One is he would trade Tyler Hero for Bradley Beal. Two, and the more shocking one, I've never heard this take before. Tua loves his parents too much, and it's a problem.
Mm-hmm. I got plenty. You want another one? Prince of Wales champions, Florida Panthers. How about that? Wait, is it the Prince of Wales now? Because the conference.
I don't know what it is this year. There's no
like
conferences.
So, Roy, can you explain, as we close this hockey loop, there's the Central Division presented by Discover, and there's four divisions right now, and the Panthers are only playing teams in the regular season. It's a shorter regular season. They're only playing the, 12 teams in their own division? Back-to-back style. It's like baseball series. And then there's an extended playoff? Is there not? And then you can finally play teams from the other divisions. But how's a conference breakdown? There's an entire Canadian division. What conference is that? Do we do total realignment in the postseason?
There's going to be a reseed after the first round, apparently. But I don't know how this playoff format is going to go. This is even confusing me.
Roy, we're in the season, and you have no idea like if there's conference distribution?
I looked at it last night. I couldn't figure it out. Like, you go in, you face one of the divisions. I don't even know what division you're going to end up playing against going into what would be the third round.
Right.
Like, it's very confusing to
me. So there are no conferences.
Well,
then what happens to the Prince of Wales? What?
You're going to still get a trophy, apparently, after the third round. I just don't know which trophy you're going to get.
How do they decide this? This is absurd. This is madness.
Can you guys give me some perspective on this? Because I feel like with what's happened during the pandemic and what's happened in general over the last 10 years of us following sports, I feel like we have arrived in a point where all of us realize in 2021, with the number of options that you have there for your attention and the constant bombardment of stimuli, that we have all realized more than ever, even though it's been a complaint almost the entirety of my lifetime, that these regular seasons are way too long, especially baseball's. But tying it into what you guys are talking about, with the changes in the playoffs during the pandemic, the adding of teams, basketball and hockey have always been sort of bogus in terms of inviting everyone to the playoffs. And baseball for a long time held out, and they played the 162 games because it mattered that you'd get to four finalists, and then they added wild card teams. And what I'm asking you is how many more teams and things do I have to do before everyone in sports, by consensus, sports fans are like, all of this is going on too long. The regular season is just money grabs, televised programming meant to just keep your dollar over the course of an entire season. And 81 and 82 games and 162 games, all this stuff is just way too long. All of it, where you're making even LeBron James bored at the end of games because none of this actually matters in a season when LeBron James is still playing an enormous number of minutes. Am I wrong when I say the regular season has never meant less than it does today to sports fans?
No, I think you're exactly right. But I think we've been there for quite some time now with the length of the NBA season. We've been talking about trimming these things down. But when you have everything normal, Dan, the NFL starts in September. You don't really pay attention to the NBA until after the NFL is over. And then you get a March Madness, and then the NBA playoffs come around. Then you don't start paying attention until baseball, until the summertime comes around. I mean, with that in mind, it's kind of done correctly in terms of piquing your interest, because you can pay attention to football even though basketball is going on. But these regular seasons, with the exception of football, which they should double the games and make them 32, okay? All these regular seasons are way too long.
The reason I'm asking the question now, Greg, is because baseball, which we have been complaining about for about 15 years around here, in terms of slowness, in terms of attention span, in terms of 162 games, baseball absolutely captured our attention during that pandemic because they just shortened everything up. And so I'm asking you, Greg, it's a lament you've heard your entire journalistic lifetime, that once upon a time, baseball, when it was the national pastime, the idea of going out to 81 games in a home park was something that you would do as a family tradition in a different America. But does that even work anymore? I know they need the programming. I know it's 162 games because the Dodgers need to have all that money from the regional programming. But if it's that overt a money grab and you dilute the product so much that the games don't actually mean anything, are we at a saturation point right now because the pandemic has fast-forwarded a bunch of inefficiencies in a bunch of different economies?
Yeah, I think the one of the only positives of this pandemic in sports has been that it's refreshing to see these shorter seasons, to see 72 games instead of 82 and 54 games instead of 82. I think it's been a real positive. And the only sport where every game counts is football. And that's why the NFL and college football, that's king sport, because every game matters. Baseball, it isn't just 162 games. They play like 25 games in spring training. And then there's the postseason. So if you're a baseball player, you end up playing 200 games in a season if you're on a good team. And it's just way too many. The games don't count. You can say, oh, they matter as much in May as they do in September. Well, we get bored with them. They're just an endless run of these games. And even 82 games to me is too many. I like the shortened season. It puts more drama into every game. So I'd love to see this be a point where sports figures out, hey, you know what? We're going to give up a little revenue. We're going to give up a little TV content for the better of the sport.
Billy, are you as amazed as I am? Look at him. He's deeply in character. The performer is back. The entertainer is back. He just did the traditional radio hit of giving us a guest answer to a question. Are you, like me, amazed by the lack of breathing, the coughing, the lack of phlegm in his throat, just the general professionalism of speaking in a soundbite that was used as content professionally and well.
I like the other Greg better, honestly.
Yeah, I miss him.
I can't win around here. When I'm sitting, you don't like me. When I'm standing and pacing and moving around like I'm on a stage, I get criticized. I don't know what to do. Let me stand on my head and see if that works. Maybe if the blood rushes.
Let's
my
try
head,
that.
Be
Let's. Can we try that
next?